I see some people, when it's time to apply for Global Talent, that's when they start doing community work. You see them a lot, like, But for me, I started doing community work from the moment I came into tech. A genuine interest and love to give back to the community, to help people, to mentor people. You don't just start doing these things because you now see that there is something attached. Then this, after this stuff, you stop now. After getting the Global Talent or whatever you're looking for, you'd stop. So it's something that has been ingrained in me. In fact, I started giving back even when I didn't have money for data. I did not even talk about the money part. Even when I was broke, my brother was the one giving me data, and he used to wonder, like, what is wrong with you? Why did you finish university with first class and you're here volunteering and you can't even afford data for yourself?
So is it necessary for community managers to know how to write code since they're interacting with, like, developer community, or is it something that it's not necessary?
This is very, very valid. Like, it's a very important question, and I don't have a lot of people asking me that question, but I think they should be asking it often.
And what would you say are some of the most important traits of a community manager from your experience?
Yes, so the number one trait of every community manager is...
My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections, to balancing work life, and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out.
Hi, I'm Amarachi. Welcome to the podcast. It's good to have you join me today. Thanks. Yeah, how are you doing? How's your day been so far?
I'm doing great. Just got off a work call.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've been having a good day.
Nice.
How are you too?
My day is good. I spent the earlier part of today just preparing for this podcast and just, yeah, doing a bit of work stuff too as well. But yeah, I'm very excited to have you and for us to get into this conversation. I'm sure it will be a very fun chat so far. Yeah. So before we get started, could you introduce yourself to us? Who is Amarachi Johnson?
Okay. Do you want the long one or the short one?
The long one is fine.
Don't mind me. I always like to go by the short one, and at least something that suits the context of our conversation. So, hi guys, hello everyone. I am Amarachi Johnson. I am a developer community manager, and I'm currently working with Consensus as a community operations manager. Aside from that, I also lead community at Women in Tech UK, where I oversee community operations and community management. And I also run a nonprofit, Edu Tribe, where I work alongside a team of volunteers to teach children digital skills. So we just concluded our summer boot camp just last week. So these are some of the things that I do. And I'm also a mom. I always like to add that because it's a full-time
job. It's a big deal.
The short one.
Okay.
So for the long one.
I wanted the long one, but okay. we'll do with the short one for today. You're doing a lot of things so well. So we'll get into some of those things in the conversation. But before we dive into, you know, our chat, I always like to start the podcast with a fun icebreaker. You know, and puts my guests on the spot. I like putting people on the spot. So it's just a simple game of would you rather. Just to I'll give you, like, would you rather do this or would you rather do that, and you pick yours and just tell me why you would, you know, why you pick that option. So the first thing, there are three questions, pretty simple questions. So would you rather walk shorter hours? Okay, would you rather work shorter hours but more work days, or you know, fewer work days and longer hours?
I prefer shorter hours. Yeah.
And more. Why?
Yes, so that I can have some time, I know, with my son.
Yes. Okay, that's interesting. Actually, I'm the opposite. I think I'll prefer longer work hours and fewer days, just because I like to, you know, chunk my time. So I just know if I'm working for 2 or 3 days, it's just 8 hours, 10 hours, and I have the remaining days to just do whatever. To just chill.
I rarely have chill days because, you know, with these kids, there is really no break. So I rather let me just merge everything together.
Everything, yeah, totally. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay, so the second one is: would you rather be able to know the future or change the past?
Honestly, I'd like to know the future.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, I'd like to know the future too. There's no time, you know, like to start.
It's gone.
Thinking about the past. Yeah, I'd like to know the future. Yeah. True. And the final is: would you rather work in an office or work from home? I think that's pretty clear.
Having worked from home for 4 years now, I want hybrid. Not like yes, like I would like to experience a hybrid role like someday. Even though I can actually do it from here, but my office is located in London and I can't commute from London like even twice a week. That's a lot. But I would have trying that out if I didn't have a child that, you know, that is literally keeping me bound at home.
yeah, that makes sense. I've been working from home as far as I can remember. I think it was just my first job that it was like hybrid, but outside of that job, I've always, you know, been working from home. But I really like the hybrid, like just working from home on some days and going to work, because I feel like I miss that social interaction. You just want to see people and just talk, but you know, there's a limit to the interaction you can have with your colleagues when you're just at home. It's just like, oh, let's have a call, you know, let's just have a call and talk about this task, and you can't really relate to them so well. So yeah, I know you started, you know, your career working as a front-end intern in 2018 and that was your experience working as a front-end developer, and right now you work as a community manager. So I'd like us to get started with: what was it like working as a front-end developer, and why did you decide to make the switch to community management?
Okay, that's actually an interesting question. So I was a front-end web developer intern in 2018, as you rightly said, and that was my first entrance into tech, right? That was after my youth service. And the truth is that I didn't choose that path. I didn't know what I was doing at that time. I had just come into tech, joined the hub, met with the boss, because my friend who, you know, introduced me to the hub told me not to let them know that I am a total newbie, just so they can accept me to join them. So when I got there, the man just asked me back end or front end. I said front end.
Did you even know what front end meant?
I did not know. I had no idea what front end meant. And so, and this is coming from someone first class computer science, right? I didn't know what front-end development was or what back-end was. So I just felt like that career path was not chosen by me. I was just a victim of circumstances and eventually landed myself into front-end development. But it's also something that I'm grateful for, because it's what really launched me into tech, helped me to see the developmental side of tech, right? The coding aspect of it before, you know, moving into community management. So it helped me to have that smooth landing, you know, get immersed in the tech community. I passed HNG internship, you know, HNG, the very rigorous internships where people fail and fail out. You know, I passed through all of that, emerged finalist, I think HNG 7 or so. So I was a front-end developer for 2 years, you know, but then after the 2 years, I started to realize that now this choice that I accidentally made, it's time for me to make my own choice. And at this time, I had already started volunteering at Shikoda Africa as a community manager, and I fell in love with community management while volunteering, right? So I just I figured that now that is actually a choice for me to now make, because then I was now making the decision from a more informed place, not that novice in 2018 who had no idea what front end was. In fact, at that time, I had no idea what community management existed as a career path. No idea. But as at 2021, I was better informed. I knew all the paths that are available for someone like me. So I made the choice to now get into community management full time.
How many resumes have you sent out with zero response? Or maybe you're getting interviews, but you just can't seem to land a job. I've been there and I know it's so frustrating, right? But the good news, I've created a toolkit to change all of that for you. Introducing the Get a Job Toolkit, your step-by-step guide to finally land your dream tech job. Inside, you get 3 resume and cover letter templates, a job tracking sheet, 100 plus interview paraphrases, reach out messages to recruiters, and a LinkedIn optimization checklist. I created this toolkit because I know how hard applying to jobs can be. So whether you're just starting out your career or making a career switch to tech, this will save you so much time and stress. Click the link below to grab your toolkit and let's get you hired.
Nice, nice. You know, just hearing you talk about the fact that you studied computer science from the university and you graduated in the first class, like we are still coming to that. But I feel like computer science is the bedrock for like web development and software engineering.
Yeah.
And the fact that after passing through school, you didn't even know what front end means, that it just makes me reflect, like, what's the whole university curriculum about?
Yeah.
It just feels like it's so theoretical that it doesn't really prepare you for the outside world.
Yeah, and I think it also depends on the university one goes to. The one I went to, unfortunately, is a type that focused more on theory. The codes that we wrote were on paper. I didn't write any reasonable code all through my stay in the university. In fact, I think we did more mathematics in the university than computers.
Wow.
Yeah, and when we would ask our lecturer, like, hello, sir, this mathematical equations we are solving, where do we actually get to start using them in the future? They are like, just shut up and learn, you know. So it depends on the school. So I'm not going to say it's the same way for every university, because I know there are a couple of people that the computer science they studied in school was the bedrock to their career in tech. But for me, mine wasn't. When I joined tech in 2018, I joined, like, I think I was just at the same point with even someone that studied biology in the university. Like, I had no idea what tech was. The first tech event I attended a month after I joined tech, everything they were saying was like jargon. I didn't understand anything. So I literally had to start from scratch. Yes.
I can totally relate, because at this point, I don't even think it's the kind of university, because I attended UNILAG, which is like one of the foremost universities, federal universities in Nigeria. And I studied mechanical engineering, but it was so theoretical. I know people always make fun of, oh, you're studying mechanical engineering, then you are a mechanic, all those kind of things. But even as a mechanical engineer, I couldn't fix anything like
you see
engines. I didn't know much about engines. So it just felt like, if I even want to pivot into repairing engines or doing anything, no matter how basic, I will still have to learn. We're just doing the Y, the X, and, you know, all those delta, gamma things. That was just like mathematics, like you said, just calculating things. So, all right. Now, I understand your journey, you know, pivoting into community management. Mm-hmm. So, for those that may not really be familiar with what community management is, how would you describe what you do?
Okay, so the basic way that I define community management is that we are kind of in between the community and the company. So we seek the interest of both the community. And when I say community here, I mean the people who use the product a company is producing. So some people can choose to call them customers. But then for a lot of tech companies, we prefer to call them our community, because we are trying to bring them along in our building journey. We are not just producing something to sell, to market. And I believe you must have come across this phrase that developers don't like to be marketed to. When you tell a developer that this particular software is the best in the market, you use it and this person is trying to market rubbish to me. So they prefer that you put them, like, you bring them along your journey. That's why we have the developer relations team. You go to events, you speak, you teach them how to actually do certain things, and then eventually they may want to check out that product because it solves a problem. So they are more about, does this solve the problem that I have, right? And not about you trying to pacify them with big grammar. So the community manager is in between, like an intermediary between the community, that's the users, and the company. So you seek for both the interest of the people. If there are feedback that you have from the community, you try to address it. If it's something you have to bring back to the company to fix, they do that. If it's something you have to organize an event to do, You do that. If it's something that you that requires you creating a Discord or a Slack where people ask their questions, that's the reason why the job roles of community management community managers is fluid. In company A, you might be doing one thing, and you move to company B, you're doing something else, because no two communities are exactly the same. So you just work according to the needs of the community. So if it's a community that is lacking educational resources, then your job should be to find a way to work with the company to provide as much educational resources as possible, maybe with the developer advocates or with the software engineers. So I don't know if this is my definition. I try to simplify it and not use like the big grammar. So just
big grammar.
Community managers are just, we are here to serve both the community and then bring your feedback to the company. So we seek the interest between these two parties. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So like the link, the person that is an intermediary between the community and the company that creates the product.
Sometimes some people mistake community management for social media management, but they are totally different things. But then I don't want to like get into that unless you want me to just trail it.
you can talk a bit about that.
Okay, yeah. So most of the time community managers engage with the community with their own face. You know, there are a lot of platforms that you see banger tweets and all of those beautiful things coming from them, but you don't know who is behind it. You're only seeing the name of the brand. But a community manager comes out as the face of the brand, you know, engaging with the community, organizing this event, speaking to people. So it's more like a way of humanizing a company.
The brand.
Yeah. So you see a face. Okay. We're not hiding behind an account to tell you about things. No, we come face to face and you're seeing us. Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And you said that like your volunteering work at She Code Africa was like your first community management experience.
Yes.
So what would you say were some of the skills you had to learn to level up to become a community manager? Is it something that was self-taught? Did you have to take a course, or did you have to understudy someone, or how did you, you know, stack up your skills to become a community manager?
Okay, so back in 2018, of course, when I started as a front-end developer, because I joined a hub, and the hub where I joined was mostly invested in doing both development work and community work as well. We organized tons of developer-focused events, so which meant that as part of a member of the hub or a team within the hub, I also participated in the organizing of these events. So I was not just doing front-end. I was doing a little bit of community work, but I didn't know that there was a name for it at that time. So I volunteered both as social media person, I volunteered as LOC for certain events. I also co-led the For Loop ABBA community. You know For Loop? ABBA chapter, I was the co-lead. So all of these things, including the Open Source Community Africa, the ABBA chapter as well, we organized an event. And then from there, I started to stack up other skills that weren't like coding or front-end web development. And then eventually I joined Open Source Community Africa as a social media manager. So all of these were experiences that I was building, but I didn't have a name for it. Like, they were just things I loved to do. I like to contribute to the community, right? So when I joined She Code Africa, I didn't take courses. I learned on the job. So I had a team of two other community managers, and they were very helpful. So I worked with a team of two community managers at She Code Africa, and then thankfully Ada herself was a DevRel ecosystem manager at Google, so I learned from the best. For every single thing I did, I had valuable feedback from her. I had feedback from my teammates. Yeah, so I would say I learned from the jobs. I didn't take any extra courses at that time, but eventually I started to take courses. I took a course from CMX Hub. I took another course from there is this other organization, I think it's Comsor. Yeah, I took a community management Comsor. And
what's Comsor?
Comsor is a community school. Like,
is it an acronym for a name? Oh, like, no. Is it a short form, or that's just
that's
name?
Comsor. Comsor, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. All right.
And based on your experience as a community manager, do you think it makes sense for community managers, or is it necessary for community managers to know how to write code since they're interacting with like developer community, or is it something that it's not necessary?
This is very, very valid. Like, it's a very important question, and I don't have a lot of people asking me that question, but I think they should be asking it often, because following my own experience, being a front-end developer first before pivoting to community management helps me greatly. I don't know why. I think it's mostly a psychological something, because currently I don't write codes anymore, but if I am at an interview and they always like to point back to my development background, like it makes okay. them have this confidence that I have been in this ecosystem long enough and I have interacted with developers long enough, and I think it also makes them feel that I can learn, right? Like I can easily contribute to open source, like I can easily create a GitHub account, I can understand their terminologies if there is a conversation somewhere. So it gives a bit of an edge. And some of my community management colleagues that I've seen who are doing very well as well, some of them have tried coding at some point. So you may not have coded for 2 years or 4 years, just have a little bit of an idea, especially if your community management is within the tech industry, is not like for other industries. If it's for tech industry, try as much as you can to learn like a little bit of coding just for a background, right? And then another thing that helps as well in that regards is to be teachable, because when you're a community manager for a Web3 company, you have to learn a few Web3 things, whether you like it or not, mm-hmm. because you can't engage and connect with a community that you don't know what they are talking about. You can't speak their lingua. So if you're a community manager in an artificial intelligence company, you have to start learning AI. So you may not go in depth into learning how to code the back end of those things, but you should be able to at least know the fundamentals of any niche that you find yourself managing. So aside from learning how to code, the most important thing is teachability, knowing how to be fluid in learning. So you learn things very fast, right? And be able to start connecting with your communities as soon as possible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love what you said about the fact that knowing how to code gives even potential employers the confidence to hire you, because they feel like you're already used to the tech ecosystem to a large extent, and also makes them know that you're teachable, you can learn things, you can pick things up. And for me, I think it's all about the context. Like as a community manager, I've not been a community manager before, but I think it makes sense to I'm a dev. I think I do a lot of that. So community management is probably involved, but I've not had like a formal title as community manager. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense, because when you're relating with people, the conversation, code stuff may come up, programming languages. So
yes.
I think it makes sense. You do not have to be a coding expert, a coding guru, but just understanding the fundamentals gives even you yourself the confidence to relate with other developers since that's your industry. Yeah, so Amrachi, you have a very interesting background, because I see Nigeria and Cameroon as your background. So did you live in Cameroon at some point, or how does Cameroon come into the whole mix?
I lived in Cameroon for some years, 2.5 years precisely. Yes, I moved in.
Interesting.
I moved in, I think, December 2021 or early 2022, thereabouts, and I left 2.5 years later. Yes.
Oh, what made you move? Was it a career switch or just personal stuff?
No, it was marriage, basically.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, do you speak some French?
Comment ça va?
If that ça va bien.
But no, I can't speak French fluently. Yeah,
because I know you had Cameroon and Nigeria. That makes sense. So let's come back to what we talked about earlier. You mentioned that you have, you studied computer science and you came out with a first class degree, which is really huge. So what made you decide to even study computer science in the first place?
Okay, so that takes me back to 2000 and what again? Is it 2007 or 2010? Okay, so back in secondary school, I was very good in mathematics. I was good at a lot of subjects anyway. I was the best graduate student in my set, but I really loved mathematics. And while my friends were all gunning for courses like nursing, medicine, even my teachers thought I would go in that direction, but I just knew that I can't cope with seeing blood and, you know, injuries and having to do all of those things. So I had to inquire from my dad, because I didn't know what I was supposed to study, because if left for me, I would have just gone ahead to study mathematics since it's something I liked. But then my dad told me that there is a possibility of doing computer science plus mathematics, that there are universities that offer that. And I was like, that's interesting. I would love to, because my dad called it double major. That was the word. So I was like, this sounds great. So my mates are coming out with one, I'm already coming with two. But eventually, when it was time for JAMB, we scouted for universities close by, because we didn't want, we couldn't afford me moving so far away. So the universities around Abia State and Imo State, which were the two cities, the two states we were looking at, didn't offer the double major, and it was either you go for computer science or you go for mathematics. So I opted for computer science.
Computer science, okay. And what would you say are some of the challenges that you had to overcome while you were at school in order for you to finish with the first class? Because, you know, finishing with the first class is not anything small, right? It's a big feat. So what were some of the things that you had to overcome to just ensure that you finish with that degree?
This is a big question, because in my university days, like, we had numerous challenges, even though I haven't really sat down to think about the challenges, because the first class, like, filled up my stomach. It made me forget about things. But looking back, my God, Umunike stressed me, because I went to Michael Okpara University in Abia State. The stress was too much. Like, the stress alone, I don't know about it, like, this, the environmental stress.
Let's break it down. What was the environmental stress like for those that don't understand? I've always heard of Umudike, but I've never been to, Abia State.
In my 100 level, you would see situations where in a 2,000 capacity hall, there would be 4,000 students meant to learn there. For most of my year one, I stood all through the lectures. You won't find seats. Sometimes the lecturers would come and there is no public address system, so they will be speaking to just themselves and the
front people, right? And I can relate.
Very early to stand in front of that place, right? So that was stress. And then, because it was a University of Agriculture, in our year one, we were meant to farm.
Really? But was that like everybody in year one, no matter your what you were studying?
Yes, it was a general course. Wow. Because it's a University of Agriculture, so you have to be inducted into agriculture whether you liked it or not. So my year one was so stressful, and, you know, in fact, I think it was my year one and year two mostly. So the moment I passed my year two, because then we stopped having a lot of general courses and started, like, having just courses within my department and my level. So the whole stress started to reduce. And then we had also grown a thicker skin to, oh, the deadline is tomorrow. Because then in year one, once you hear the deadline is tomorrow, you go and queue up. You can spend like 2 hours queuing in a very long line. And that's our particular set was one of the years the university did, like, was it over admission? So I think they were not even prepared to handle the number of students they brought in. So after the first 2 years, things became a lot easier. But one thing that I know is that the first 2 years are actually the years you build your GP. So if the first 2 years are that tough and so stressful, and you fail and your GP is not built, 300 level, if your GP is bad in the first 2 years, is just keep praying to just get a normal grade and go. But you know, I had to read a lot. I think it's also one of the reasons, because I had coursemates who, even while we were in Umudike, they were programming. They were doing well in their programming. And it wasn't the university that was teaching them. They were doing personal development. They were probably taking courses and all of those things. But for on my own part, I didn't have a laptop till I got to final year. So I did the only thing I could do at that time, which was to read my books. Right, so I didn't do anything programming, I didn't learn anything. The only thing I was learning were the things I had in class, going to the library, and yeah, eventually it paid off, and I now went to, you know, start doing the coding.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. When we were talking about those kind of 2,000 capacity halls that, you know, have 4,000 students. It was very similar for me in year one because we used to call the place DLI. So you would just come and sometimes no public address system for this. Many times, in fact, not just sometimes.
At this point.
Many times. Yeah, many times there will be no public address system. There will be no light. So you're there, you're sweating, lots of people, and you can't even hear the lecturer. Yeah. The lecturer is just talking to, you know, the few people in front, and you're standing. So what my mom did at that time, she was so lovely. So she gave me a, you know, collapsible plastic chair. So every time people are rushing, every time it was so funny because it was so cute and funny because people are like, oh, so you can't stand with us. But well, my mom gave me my chair. So every time people are rushing to find a good seat, I'm just with my chair. And once I get there, I just put it down, I sit, and I pack it up, and I leave.
Oh, I wish I had that too because at some point I had a swollen leg. Yeah, I had a swollen leg because of the consistent standing. Like, I literally stood every single day. Yes.
Wow. Can totally relate. But now I think everything has paid off because you work as the community operations manager at Consensus.
Yes.
And I think you're working with the DevRel team at MetaMask, right?
Yes.
So I would say, can you share more about how you got the role? Like, what was the whole interview process like?
Okay, so I joined Consensus Mesh in 2022. That is like a sister company to Consensus, right?
Oh, okay.
That was my first year in Web3 and my first my first job actually in the Web3 space. So I was with them for 2 years. So as a result, my joining Consensus was not as, I don't think I passed through the exact typical interview process that someone from a different company would join, because it's just like when you're moving from one Microsoft company to another Microsoft company, you're still like within the
ecosystem.
You're still like you're moving from this place to this place. Yes, but the process was smooth. It was seamless. I had about four interviews. I had about four interviews, and then I got an offer to join. Yes.
Yeah, and that's a lot. So I'm just wondering, if you had four interviews, what would it have been if you were not even in the system?
Yeah, I think
probably a lot more interviews.
I think it's typically the same number of interviews, but I think it's in the experience that differed. Like, okay. I have no idea if this is the typical way that interviews are conducted as Consensus anyway, but I realized that during the interviews, my conversation with the interviewers was, it didn't sound like an interview to me. You understand? Like, it was not, they weren't like so bothered about certain things. So it was mostly about, what are the things you did at your previous company? Okay, how do we make it easy for you to join us and bring in those skills? Like something like that. So that's why it may not be the typical. So I try not to use this experience. It might still be the typical. I've not applied from outside. Yeah, but like from my own point of view, I just feel like it was a little bit it was too seamless. It was too seamless. And I'm somehow feeling that is because I moved from a sister company to Consensus. That's just the thought.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have to apply, or was it like a referral?
Yes, it was a referral. Exactly. I did not apply.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Puts things in perspective.
Yes.
And what would you say are some of the most important traits of a community manager from your experience?
Yes. So the number one trait of every community manager is organizational skills. As a community manager, you're going to be on top of a lot of things. You may be working on many things at the same time, right? So if you're someone who is not very coordinated, some things will start falling through the cracks, and you wouldn't want that. You wouldn't want like your efforts to be in vain because you couldn't organize things properly. And another thing is attention to details, because you're managing people, you're managing a community, so you should be very, very detailed. Even when you're putting out information or you're trying to send a message to a community, you read it and read it again and again and again and again, because one statement that is misconstrued in your in your writing can lead to big problems for you. So you have to be very attentive to details. So organizational skills, attention to details. Another is empathy. For you to be a good community manager, you should be able to step into the shoes of the people you're managing. You are supposed to. That's why I mentioned earlier about learning about the thing that the community is building or using, because that's the only way you can now think about what are the typical things that someone who joins this community today would need, right? What are the things that are currently lacking? You have to be very empathetic to be able to meet the needs of your community members. Think this tree. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you have organization skills, empathetic skills, and what else?
Attention to details. Yes.
Attention to details. So if you're
Important one is communication. Yes, as a
communication.
You're writing, you're speaking, you're communicating all the time. And communication here is not just with your community or with their social media platforms. You're also communicating to your managers and your bosses. Somehow you should know how to properly convey both the impact of the work you're doing, because if you check very well, nowadays a lot of companies are closing their community teams, and the reason is because most of the time when there are layoffs in an organization, the first point of impact is the team that it seems like they don't have value. Right, so a lot of times the thing we portray for DevRel teams is the travels. It looks like it's a peck, but I don't think the travels DevRel teams do is a peck. They are working, you know.
Yeah, they're working.
That travel should convert, because if you spend a lot of money, company money, traveling to events, and you're not getting leads,
it's not showing on the bottom line of the business. Yeah,
company is just seeing red lines on their budget sheets, but it's not converting in the work that has been done. And when it's time for layoffs, a lot of times it impacts the DevRel team. So it's something that I learned like much later in my role as a community manager, to be able to communicate. So communication here is not just about the English you speak or the English you write. It's also how you communicate your impact within an organization to the stakeholders that need to know about.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it. How you communicate your impact, because the most important thing, like when you have a job as a community manager, is your impact. So you can have so many activities, but if it's not leading to what the stakeholders want, at that point, you know, the stakeholders may begin to question, is it worth you keeping this team or this person in our company? So yeah, just knowing how to communicate is very important. Are there things you do not really enjoy about being a community manager? Are there like downtimes on the job?
Yes.
Would you like to share some? Because I also have the downtimes I have experienced on the job as a developer advocate. Yeah. So yeah, what are some downtimes for you as a community manager?
The downtime, two downtimes for me. One was when I started seeing a lot of community folks lose their roles. Like, yeah, you know, I follow a lot of community managers on LinkedIn. So an everyday thing, I would see community managers being laid off. And I also knew that I had a lot of community managers who were also looking. So I was like, people are looking, the ones that have jobs are being laid off. Like, why? I just felt like the industry was under attack. I don't know how to put it better. And then the second thing that has been a low time for me in the industry is when you organize an event and you are afraid of whether people would show up. This especially happens when you're working for small communities, like small organizations. You put in a lot of efforts and then you organize an event, and like few days before an event, it still happens to me even now that I've moved on to bigger companies. Like I still have this, you know, this prayer, like, God, please let people
show up.
Yeah, I know that people will show up because now I'm in a bigger organization, but I still like pray that we have growth in the metric, because it's no longer about people showing up, but I need to see that upward tilt when I'm looking at my metrics. I want to see that in June this number showed up and in July it increased. Yeah, because 1,000 people show up this month, next month is 1,500. It's a lot of people, but it's declining. It's not going and I need it to go up. So when you're in smaller teams, the fear is let people, you know, show up. And I think I've had a situation where I organized an event and nobody showed up. It's a nightmare.
That must have been tough.
It is.
Must have been tough. Wow. Yeah, I can totally relate, particularly to the one you mentioned first about suffering layoffs. And personally, as a developer advocate, I've suffered layoffs twice on my job, and it hasn't been funny. I think a lot of people see the outward perks, like you said, the travel, the hosting events, the in quotes, you're like the celebrity of your company in quotes, because you're the one that people really see in terms of the community.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, you know, it's very hard to really measure impact in that sense, because if you're creating content, how can you really measure that your content is converting or your content made people join the community?
Yeah.
So those are the things that I'll say are the downtimes for me, just knowing that you're constantly in a niche that there is no job guarantee. There's no job guarantee. You're constantly looking behind your shoulders to be sure that, okay, I hope I keep this job.
Yeah, so and communicating impact in DevRel is still a challenge. I won't say that I have even like gotten to that point where I feel like very, very safe and solid. Because sometimes, you know, because you're dealing with people, when you go for these events, you've spoken at the event, people even responded so well to your talk, they asked you questions. But how do you now confirm that this...
How are you sure that they created accounts?
Or that they downloaded the app and paid subscription. A lot of times as well, what I noticed is that the work of DevRel is not reaped in the near, like in the now. It's
future. Exactly. It's a future thing.
That's if you stay long enough for the future to come.
Literally. That's if you are there when the proceeds start coming in, because you're just sowing, but it's not your time for harvest.
Yeah.
You just keep sowing, and then stakeholders want you to sow and reap at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah, but Amachi, we are gradually wrapping up now.
Yeah.
You are a global talent. You're a UK global talent. So yeah, it's a huge thing to be a UK global talent. So congrats.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I would like to find out, what was the journey like to becoming a global talent, and yeah, what even made you to consider that?
Okay, so you asked two questions. You asked about the journey and what made me consider which of them to start.
You can start with what made you consider, then we talk about the journey.
All right, so of course, I moved to Cameroon in 2021, last 2022, to meet my husband. So after we had our child, we started a conversation on leaving Cameroon. But we weren't very sure, because we wanted to have a clear directive from God, especially because this is a huge step and Cameroon was our comfort zone as well. Like, we didn't... That's why when people say you Japan, I'm like, what is Japan? I was fine in Cameroon, like... I did not run from Cameroon. Nobody chased me. So that was why we took our time. We took the whole of 2023 praying about it. And then earlier this year, we got the confirmation that we needed that we are actually free to leave. And thank you, my boy. He gave me some biscuits. So... and we considered, like, what are the available pathways to, you know, to migrate? What are the countries that we can move to? So we had just two countries in mind. We basically had Canada and UK. And, you know, when looking at Canada, looking at UK, we checked again and saw that there is actually this UK Global Talent Visa. So we, I checked, I'm using we here because it was a decision between I and my husband, right? So checked our portfolios to know who is best suited to do this application, whether my husband should try or I should. So eventually we decided I should do the first trial, then if maybe mine doesn't work out, then he can try through academia. So yeah, that was basically the journey. Was very short for me. I guess mostly is because I've been building in public for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things I spoke about in a session I attended on Sunday about the importance of building in public. And when I was building in public, I didn't know that a time would come in the future when I would need those things. I was just being myself. I love to share some of the things that I'm working on. So it was just as simple as going back to either my Google Drive where I've kept some screenshots, or my social media platforms where I have also kept some pictures. So gathering the evidences took me about 6 weeks, mostly because I had to wait for some recommendations that came much later, but I was pretty much done in like 3 to 4 weeks. And then we did the application 2 weeks after I got endorsed. I applied for the visa, and here we are. So it was
nice, seamless story.
Within like two months, we already had our visas. Yeah,
that's good to know. And are there any major differences between working in the UK and working in Cameroon?
Yes, of course. There are the difference. The when it comes to how I work, nothing changed. Mm-hmm. I still work from home. I used to work from home in Cameroon. I still work from home here. But when it comes to like my boy started crèche earlier this year in January, right? So now
mm-hmm.
he's not yet eligible to go to the school, I think the free school. So it's still next year. So now I have to be with him at home. So it has also changed a couple of things, both my wake up time and all of those things. So apart from the childcare aspect, I think every other thing is pretty much the same. Now I don't also have to struggle with the language barrier that I struggled with in Cameroon. For the entire 2 years I spent in Cameroon, I did not attend any tech events because we were in Yaoundé, which was a predominantly French place, so most of the tech events were in French, and I can't attend a French event. So I even think that even though we haven't been here for so long, we just moved, so just trying to adjust to the environment. But I know that when we get more settled, I think it's a good thing that I'm actually here. I think it will help my career more than whatever I saw in Cameroon. And as well, like, since I moved there, I know the number of DMs I get from recruiters.
It's definitely increased because of your location.
Now that my location has changed, it has opened me up to more opportunities. So of course, we are children of God, so it's always going to be better from here.
Onward and upward. Okay, so my final question for today is, looking back at, on your career, you have a very interesting career trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
What's one belief or principle that has carried you through the highs and the lows of your career?
It's actually more than one belief, but if you want
me... Yeah, you can share one or two. Yeah.
Okay, so the first is giving back, giving to the community. I see some people, when it's time to apply for global talent, that's when they start doing community work. You see them a lot, but for me, I started doing community work from the moment I came into tech in 2018. So community, being part of a community and being involved as an active participant in the community is very important. And when I say active participation, it can be things like the articles, like when you learn something and you decide to write about what you've learned, like my global talent journey, I already have an article on it, even though I haven't shared it yet. By the way, this is the first public platform that I'm sharing about that journey. It's not been announced. I don't know when this video would go out, but anyhow, it's not a secret. It's just that I haven't just shared it yet. I have an article that has been written. This is my way of trying to share, this is my experience, these are the things I know about this stuff, so that, because I know that I was able to apply for this because I saw people that shared their story as well. I know the number of articles I read during this period. I there were questions people made public, like the tech forum, now the Tech Nation forum, that people were giving valuable feedback on people's application. That I believe that since I am also a beneficiary of community, I shouldn't get through a process and then hide my own. How do the people around me and people coming after me be able to gain knowledge from the things that I've learned? So from the very first time I joined tech, I started to share my knowledge, started to volunteer. So my principle is giving back, and it has helped my career immensely. It's the giving back is not for any gains, is not with any let me get this stuff out of it in
money ulterior motive,
a genuine interest and love to give back to the community, to help people, to mentor people. You don't just start doing these things because you now see that there is something attached. Then it's, after this stuff, you stop now. After getting the global talent or whatever you're looking for, you'd stop. So it's something that has been ingrained in me. In fact, I started giving back even when I didn't have money for data. I did not even talk about the money part. Even when I was broke. And even like, my brother was the one giving me data, and he used to wonder, like, what is wrong with you? Why did you finish university with first class and you're here volunteering and you can't even afford data for yourself? It was that bad. Wow. It was because this is something I love to do. It's something I love to do, and I kept at it. And then these things that I have benefited out of it are just extra things I did not plan for. Like when I was applying for the global talent visa, I had to go, I was just wondering, like, my goodness, like when I look at my career trajectory, it just looked like I planned for, like, it just looked like I planned.
Everything just worked together.
I'm telling you, like, I didn't struggle to get any evidence I was looking for. They were just all there, as if I had already planned it from 2018 that in 2024 I was going to do this application. But the thought of applying for global talent visa did not come until I think ending of January this year, you see. So I didn't have to hustle for anything, no last minute planning, no last minute contributing to the community, because I've been doing it way back. So it's one of my principles. Then number two is consistency. I know it's cliche, people talk about it a lot, but there is really nothing you can do, if even not just in your career, even in your personal life, there is nothing you can achieve much if you're not consistent. If you do something today, you do it tomorrow, it seems like it's not working and you dump it, right? Even in your life as a person, maybe you want to get closer to God, it's something that you have to do on a daily basis, because if you don't do it on a daily basis, you will not get to that point where you can even yield any fruit. So in my career, I have tried as much as I can to remain consistent, even when it seems things are not working the way I planned. I can pivot though, as you can see, I moved from front end to community management, but I'm still consistent. So being consistent, remain in something that is not working forever. No, just the value is the same, the future or the goal is the same, but what you just change is the approach. You understand? I think I tried UI UX at some point.
that's good to hear. I actually did UI UX at some point too. I actually used to design interfaces for people as a freelancer. So yeah, as a tech person, when you look back, you probably realize that you've done more than one thing. You know, you've dabbled into more than one industry.
Yeah, but the goal is,
but that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, the goal is the same, but the approach can change at some point.
Different. Yeah. Love it. Love what you've shared about consistency and giving back to the community genuinely. So yeah, thank you, Amarachi. This has been a very fun conversation. I've enjoyed every bit of it, and I'm sure that those listening and watching have also enjoyed it. So thanks for coming, and look forward to everything you'll be doing in the community, you know, as a community operations manager. Thank you.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Well, it's been a great 1 hour spent with you. Thanks for all you've been doing in the tech ecosystem. You know, I've been following you for a while now, and I see how much you also give back to the community. Bunch of courses on your YouTube.
Yeah.
My goodness. I'm like, where do you get your energy from? Like,
thank you so much. I appreciate
all that, and you know, just leave it for the community. It's fantastic, and I admire people like you who give back to the community. So thank you so much for having me and for all you do.
Thank you, Amarachi. Thank you so much. And yeah, thanks everyone for watching and listening and sticking to the end of this worthwhile conversation. Till next time, I'll see you on another episode. Bye
everyone.